Are you kidding me? A new law would jail moms for calling their sons boys and their daughters girls? An indigenous member of the Kamloops band says the mass graves fake news was an excuse to attack religion. So, what was this all about then? Plus, Tucker Carlson calls it a new god that should be strangled in its crib. Artificial intelligence and the war on humanity. Who was this man? And why did Freemasons hack him to death in broad daylight? Tonight, Catholic Men and the Spirit of Garcia Moreno. Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Matt. This is the Remnant Underground. Holy Week now is upon us again, which means it's time to ramp up the Christophobia, of course. 2 weeks ago, we covered the war on Christ is King, which is sure to heat up now, between now and Easter Sunday, of course.
In 2024, more than 50% of all engagements around Christ is King posts were driven by extremist influencers.
Now, the full report is called Thy Name in Vain, How Online Extremists Hijacked Christ is King, right? The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, is involved, of course. And sadly, friends, it was funded by none other than Dr. Jordan Peterson. Yeah, so wow, I mean, obviously that's a huge problem. You got kids out there on the internet, like unguided missiles in cyberspace, tossing Christ is King around. I'm glad that Jordan Peterson is really taking this seriously and put an end to this blight. You know what I mean? Because I don't know how we're going to survive if we don't do something about that. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, it's time to strip parents now of custody for misgendering their own children.
Colorado House just passed a bill that would consider it a form of child abuse if you're a parent and you misgender your child, calling your son a boy or your daughter a girl, citing the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Some of the groups in opposition to this bill are on a list of hate groups maintained by one of the most well-known civil rights law firms.
That's the same SPLC that paid $3 million in a defamation lawsuit. The same SPLC whose hate map inspired a domestic terrorist attack. The same SPLC that unionized amid a racial discrimination and sexual harassment scandal, and that now faces claims of union busting.
Yes. The old Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, our friends over there on the left, far left. This is that loony leftist nonprofit organization that raises money for itself by pretending to be social justice warriors, of course. The SPLC is a total joke.
The co-founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, a deep-pocketed left-wing civil rights organization, was fired on Wednesday.
Now, again, we're going to talk about truth versus narrative. That's the truth. Everybody knows that's the truth. Every serious journalist out there knows that's the truth. And yet every few months, just like clockwork, some lazy loser journalist dredges up the SPLC's intelligence report, read fundraiser, on hate groups in America, and then phones in some hysterical little fake news story about hate groups, as if the SPLC were somehow legitimate.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, based in that building in Alabama, calls itself the premier group monitoring hate groups and other extremists. Looking at their map of hate groups, you'd think hate groups were everywhere. I once believed what the center said. Well-meaning people still do. Apple gave them $1 million. But what donors don't know is that today, the center's become a hate group itself. It's now a left-wing, money-grabbing slander machine.
Again, that's the truth. Trouble is, the truth has absolutely nothing to do with what the SPLC does for a living. For them, it's all about the narratives.
Last year, the FBI let us in on a secret. The real threat to America is traditional Catholics. Apparently, Catholics who attend the Latin Mass are a secret cabal of hate, full of anti-Semites and homophobes. This is, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, when a brave whistleblower published the FBI's report on radical traditional Catholics, the Bureau rushed to rescind the document. More than a year after the FBI publicly retracted the memo, the SPLC has kept radical traditional Catholic hate groups on its hate map. The SPLC branded the Ruth Institute, a small Roman Catholic organization, an anti-LGBTQ plus hate group. Why? The Ruth Institute's founder, Jennifer Roback Morse, restated the centuries-old official position of the Catholic Church on sexuality. If quoting the Catechism is enough to make the Ruth Institute a hate group, then the entire Catholic Church should be considered a hate group.
Bingo!
President Biden, who calls himself Catholic and goes to Mass, needs to explain why he's relying on an extremely anti-Catholic organization.
Now, this is very serious, impacts us directly. Biden's FBI director, Christopher Wray, it got so bad that he finally had to go out and apologize to the congressional committee over that SPLC report or what they were doing with Latin Mass Catholics.
The Richmond product, which was a single product by a single field office, which as soon as I found out about it, I was aghast and ordered it withdrawn and removed from FBI systems.
The FBI director went on to further deny that the Bureau was targeting Catholics as a terrorist organization.
We do not recruit, open, or operate confidential human sources to infiltrate, target, report.
But that's not what religious organizations. That's not what this said. It sounds like you were trying to do it in Richmond, Virginia.
No, sir.
But now Judiciary Committee Chair Congressman Jim Jordan and Mike Johnson say they have evidence that the FBI, quote, relied on information from around the country, from FBI offices in Portland, Oregon, and Los Angeles, California, to develop its assessment that some traditionalist Catholics could potentially be domestic terrorists.
If Christopher Wray is still looking for the source of that that fake news, well, it is the Southern Poverty Law Center. In fact, if you Google their so-called intelligence report from 2007, put them on the screen, you'll find that that fake news product has been being sent all over the place to law enforcement organizations, including the FBI, literally for years, despite the fact it's completely fake news. And incredibly now, that same report from 2007, they really loved that one over at the SPLC, it was recirculated, maybe I should say regurgitated, again, just last year.
Imagine that an organization that brands conservatives and Christians haters and puts them on a map with chapters of the Ku Klux Klan works with the federal government, advising the administration on its domestic terror strategy. This Orwellian nightmare isn't a hypothetical. It actually happened under the Biden administration. The Biden administration has used the SPLC to target radical traditional Catholics. And last year, the SPLC added parental rights groups like Moms for Liberty to the hate map.
Now, keeping in mind that this is an intelligence report put together by lawyers, I would think that they would find it interesting that half of the traditionalist groups that they have on their list and their hate map don't even exist anymore. They're defunct. They're gone. So let's just have the AP send that same report out anyway, year after year, to see if any of that crap sticks. I guess that's the way it works. So you need to beware, the SPLC is out there warning everyone, beware of the traditional Catholic domestic terrorists. Here's what they look like. That's pretty scary stuff. I'm glad the SPLC is on the case. But you know what, friends? It's Holy Week once again. This is actually very serious. The far left is engaging in this around the clock. Most of us aren't even paying attention to them. That's what they're doing. And none of this really should surprise us. You know, if the world hates you, Jesus told us, know ye that it hath hated me before you. And this is all about hate. They say they're trying to round up hate criminals and domestic terrorists, but what they're doing is trafficking in hate hysteria. So over at Remnant Newspaper right now, we're talking about what's going on. Our Joshua Hernandez writes that, quote, amidst a deafening silence in the face of a rising death toll that continues to climb into the tens of thousands, the slaughter of Christians in Syria, which we're going to talk about in a moment, and the destruction of our ancient churches, the most urgent concern in the minds of many, even conservatives, is to suppress the phrase, Christ is King.
This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the worst catastrophe in the world. People are out there on the internet saying Christ is King. And again, meanwhile, back in the real world,
Alawites and Christians minorities are being killed in different parts of Syria.
Religious persecutions in Nigeria continue to make headlines. Watchdog groups accuse the Nigerian government of turning a blind eye to the thousands of cases of kidnappings and mass killings of Christians, including Catholics.
The bishop is asking all Catholics to pray.
This advocacy is important. No, because we can't just die in silence. We should know, but we'll pray first because we are men and women of hope. And actually, hope, our hope is alive. We don't hope in princes, we don't hope in kings, we don't hope in rulers, we hope in God.
The death toll continues to rise. Some are calling it a genocide. And many say that this is an issue the Trump administration cannot ignore.
And the really sad thing is, despite all of that, I mean, even the Trump administration, it's all worked up over anti-Semitism on college campuses. Really? I'm not sure how many Jewish students have been killed so far on college campuses in the United States of America, but boy, we sure are going to keep an eye on that story for you. I mean, if it ever happens. We're going to get to all that tonight, friends, but first I'm going to talk a little bit of shop, talk about tonight's sponsor, which is the oldest traditional Catholic newspaper in the world. The Remnant has maintained its print edition for 60 years. As you can see on your screen right now, I'm talking about a newspaper that comes off a web press every 2 weeks. Now, this is an expensive labor of love that provides a place, however, where people don't have to crawl to Potter, if you know what I mean.
This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter.
Now, this measly institution, this newspaper, offers Vatican news, politics from a Catholic perspective, puzzles and teasers for the children at home. We have an Ask Father column, which is questions and answers on everything, morality, theology, you name it, historical sketches, lives of the saints, all served up now by writers representing the Catholic clans all around the world. Catholic clans from Italy, Catholic clans from Romania, Singapore, and a shout out to my friends in Singapore, by the way. Huge supporters of the Remnant in Singapore. You know who you are. Thank you, Singapore clans, for all you're doing for us. We really appreciate it. God bless you all. And then we have, you know, correspondents in Australia, England, Japan, all over the United States. And here's the thing. Here's the point I want to make tonight, friends, and I'm deadly serious. Everything that goes into this newspaper and into remnantnewspaper.com and into this show, this down here in the underground, it's all produced by real people. And that sounds crazy. Of course it is. Well, not of course it is anymore. You can't be sure of that anymore. This is produced by people living in the real world, writers who take pride in their craft, living all over the world, right? Submitting original material to me every few days for us to publish and post, right? And this is becoming very, very important for us to think about because we're in the middle of a really, really weird revolution in which Pilate's question, what is truth, becomes our question today. And all the writers, all the people, the whole team, Remnant team, they're trying to help this remnant of Christian believers throughout the world. They're trying to help us all stay Christian, stay sane, and incredibly, to stay human. Like I always say, first they made war on God, and then they made war on the angels, which nobody believes in anymore at all. Nobody even talks about the angels. And now they've worked their way down to humanity. War on humanity. Human beings are starting to disappear. Humanity beginning to disappear in our world when we start living in this virtual reality, right? And this reminds me now, I want to make a promise tonight. And that's why I say a little shop talk. I want to make a promise to this audience, and I'm deadly serious, about this AI thing, which I called anti-human intelligence, by the way. And here's the promise. Here in the Remnant Underground, over at the newspaper, Remnant Newspaper, at our website, remnantnewspaper.com. I promise you, I will never surrender to this AI beast. I will not. So everything you see, and this is going to become important. If you don't realize what this promise means, you will in the days ahead. When you get fooled again and again by what purports to be real and turns out to be absolutely not real, not true. We need to put our heads together here. Everything you see, everything you hear on this show, in this newspaper, will always be the work of human hands, written, spoken, and thought out by human minds, human beings, our team. I promise you this. I will never run anything through ChatGPT, which means that the thoughts expressed down here on this show are mine. They're not plagiarized, okay? And this is an important promise. As I say, moving forward, I think you're going to come to appreciate that because it's going to get a little bit hard to find. The temptation is, if I can't think of anything to say today, well, I'll just type a few things into ChatGPT and give that to people, and even charge people for that. We've had a couple of columnists, writers, have come to us and say, well, I use ChatGPT for this column. Would you be interested in publishing it in the Remnant? I say, absolutely not. Sell it somewhere else. Want nothing to do with it. So if you're with me on this, if you want to continue to know what is true, to be sure what is true, at least as far as we see it, then sign up. Subscribe to this newspaper, especially sign up for my e-blast. I'll put a little link right down here. And let's keep it real. We just revamped that whole email system, which means we're going to use it a lot more. We're going to reach a lot more of you. We're going to have direct and personal communication with you through these various organs, the newspaper, the e-blast, and of course, right here in the underground. Let's just keep it human, friends. I'm dead serious. I can't believe that we even have to talk about this, but we do. Again, Pilate asked Jesus, what is true? Well, do you know what it is anymore? I mean, pretty soon we're all going to be asking ourselves the same thing. Is that true? Well, I just went out to Platteville the other day, a conference in Wisconsin. And I can't tell you how nice it was to look into people's eyes, to talk with them, to laugh with them, to be human together for a conference. You know what I mean? Like the internet is getting to be a very strange place. And maybe it will begin consuming itself and forcing us to meet more often, like we're going to do in the Sharp Pilgrimage here in France in a couple months. Meet more often, really, and in the real world, you know? Because, we're going to be asking ourselves the same thing. What's true? Do we know what it is? And if we know what truth is, do we know how to find it in the years to come? Will we know how to find it? Now, here's an interesting clip.
Владимир Владимирович, здравствуйте. Я студент и учусь в Санкт-Петербургском государственном университете.
Now, that's Vladimir Putin, right? Wrong. No, it's not Putin.
Владимир Владимирович, здравствуйте. Я студент и учусь в Санкт-Петербургском государственном университете. Хочу спросить, правда ли, что у вас много двойников?
You could do that with anybody. And in a world that has completely lost its moral compass, as ours has, in a world that has abandoned the Christian ethic, Christian morality, to the extent that ours has, how do you think this is going to end? What's this going to look like in a few years? Deception on steroids doesn't even begin to do it justice. You're not going to know. You're not going to know. At the same time, you got guys like Musk coming out there and saying the AI future, the robot future is what we're going to have. Humanity is literally going to disappear. Remember during COVID, masking us up, separate us, lock us in our houses. What were they doing? They were making war on our humanity. And they're doing the same right now. This technocracy is going to be fundamentally anti-human. People say, well, I'm going to use it to evangelize. Are you? Really? You're going to use lying and deception to evangelize? I wonder. Again, remember, never forget how they used the science to deceive us during COVID. Do you think this is going to be any different? Do you think they're suddenly going to develop a conscience and not use this in nefarious ways? Do you honestly think that's going to happen? And it's the potential for the Christophobia. I mean, Jesus Christ is the one who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? And if we don't watch out, friends, we are soon going to have a new God, one of our own creation with superhuman intelligence.
There's a spiritual component here for sure. People will worship AI as a God. AI, Ted Kaczynski was likely right, will get away from us. We will be controlled by the thing that we made. All those are bad. And we need to say unequivocally, it's bad. It's bad to be controlled by machines.
Right.
Machines are helpmates. Like we created them to help us to make our lives better, not to take orders from them. So I don't know why we're not having any of these conversations right now. We're just acting as if this is like some kind of virus like COVID that just spreads across the world inexorably. There's nothing we can do about it. Just wait to get it. It's like, no. If we agree that the outcome is bad, which and specifically it's bad for people, we should care what's good for people. That's all we should care about. Is it good for people or not? If it's bad for people, then we should strangle it in its crib right now.
Right.
And why just blow up the data centers? Like, I don't, why is that hard? If it's actually going to become what you just described, which is a threat to people, humanity, life, then we have a moral obligation to murder it immediately. And since it's not alive, we don't need to feel bad about that.
I'm sorry. I'm just not going to bow down to that new god, Elon Musk. No, thank you. I won't even use it. And I certainly will not let myself be seduced by it, because it is going to have a seductive quality such as the world has never seen. People say, well, it's impossible, man. You got to get with the times. You can't be a Luddite. This is the future. Okay? It's impossible to stay away from it. And I say, really? That's what they said 20 years ago when the internet began gobbling up every Catholic newspaper in the world. Most of them are now gone, right? They said that to me. You can't say no. You got to go along with it, man. And I said, really? No, I don't think so. And I don't care who calls me the man from La Mancha for tilting at these windmills, but I stayed with the newsprint, and it's still going. The newspaper is still going. It's right here in my hand. You hear that? You smell that? Newsprint. Fake news, fake and gay news, is much harder to produce when you have something real in your hands like this. It can't be manipulated. So the remnant, so far, friends, thanks be to God, because of a commitment to tap the brakes on this stuff, the remnant is still sane. It's still human. And really, if you think about it, I'm quite proud of this, and I think it's something everybody can do. Because of that commitment to be careful, we haven't fallen for one of their fake news stories ever since. We didn't fall for COVID. We didn't fall for Ukraine. We didn't fall for Gaza. We didn't fall for the Great Reset. And we're certainly not going to fall now for AI. We've got to keep our thoughts our own. We've got to turn off the TVs, turn off our little robot buddies, turn off the artificial intelligence, and immunize ourselves against the plague of deception and its propagandistic war on the truth. Truth in general and truth with a capital T. Let's give an example of how deception and how the narrative trumps the truth. People don't talk about it. This stuff happens. It turns out to be absolutely fake news. And it just goes into the memory hole. So do you remember when Pope Francis, for example, went up to Canada, he dressed up like Cochise and apologized for the Catholic Church's alleged slaughter of the indigenous children in residential schools? Do you remember that? Well, now everybody's up there in Canada, every conservative, every serious journalist who's paying attention is up there saying, okay, so that turned out to be fake and gay.
It's been 4 years since the world was told that the remains of 215 children was discovered in unmarked graves at the former Kamloops Indian Residential School. Hundreds of attacks on churches and millions of tax dollars later being handed out for the claim, and the truth is, to date, not a single body has been found. An important truth that when championed by professionals like Supreme Court judge, lawyers, educators, elected officials, and a few brave journalists, gets us branded as racist residential school deniers, with political forces calling to criminalize our accurate speech, even when evidence points to an old septic field instead of a massacre of missing children. Society is told to shut up and pay up, and trust the tales labeled as oral testimonies instead. But today, a Kamloops band member is breaking the silence. I've verified their identity, which we will be protecting. We've altered their voice, and some facts are omitted to avoid them from facing political persecution too. This report is not about minimizing the harms that some residential school students experience. It's about our history. It's about the truth. It's about how society would call this individual a residential school survivor when this person says residential schools were the better place to be.
So I'll put a link down here. You can watch that entire interview because it's well worth it. And I wonder, did you fall for that narrative when Francis was up there doing that? That's the full weight. They use the full weight of the Vatican, the full authority, moral authority of the Catholic Church to say, oh, yes, that's a true story. And then the church has started to burn. Well, they'd already been burning. He went and gave a blessing to the fact that the churches were burning in Canada, Catholic, formerly Catholic Canada. So you probably didn't fall for it. If you were watching this show, you certainly didn't, because at the time we warned you, don't fall for this.
No, and the kids were being educated. And they wanted their children there. Does that mean there were never any abuses? No, that's not what we're talking about. See, the whole system is being decried. Francis is going to go apologize for the entire system. And wouldn't it be fun, once again, to ask a few questions? Because there are certainly plenty of witnesses out there among the tribes, among the indigenous peoples of Canada, who are wanting to tell the other side of the story.
Concert pianist, librettist, novelist, and playwright, Thompson Highway's life has taken him from the trap lines of northern Manitoba to the stages of the world. His plays are studied at universities all over North America, and he has almost single-handedly created a vibrant and viable native theater in Canada.
I would think that your life, your adult life, would be more informed by what was probably the dichotomy of your early years, the more exaggerated extremes, I would think, than most people would have. Idyllic to start with, certainly less than idyllic as it became later when you were in a residential school.
Oh, that's a mistake.
Is that right?
The residential school experience for me was a fantastic experience.
Is that right?
So much of that is reported, you know, that's skewed. It's not quite right. They don't have the whole picture. There was a lot of us who had positive experiences at the Native Residential School.
But I am, I've got to say, surprised when you say that the residential experience was a good one for you.
Yeah, it was. I learned how to speak English.
Yeah.
I learned how to play the piano.
That started at residential school, the piano thing.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he get to tell his side of the story? Plenty of those people up there. None of them get to be heard, though. They don't have a voice because it doesn't fit the narrative. You know, and yet the photo op happened anyway. The whole world got to see that the Pope himself believed this. The Pope apologized for the Catholic Church's missionary activity. Didn't really draw any distinction. They basically, the Catholic priests and nuns must have just been up there eating children and burying them in mass graves, killing them all, just wiping them out, because the Pope went up there and apologized. You see? And now 3 years later, thank God, Rebel News is talking to an indigenous whistleblower who nails it. And how does he nail it? Because he points out, as we were pointing out at the time, this is simply a war on religion.
You've noticed them all at church, the serving bird gone, or bus done for nothing, in my opinion. Just no call for it, no reason for it. I'll take one little correctness there. So there's a senior day against religion for some reason. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, religion meant our churchmen. Community and family. It seems like the liberals, they want to destroy family. So the way to do that is to attack religion. Mm-hmm. So Sunrise, the native cause, to attack religion. They only really care about the natives. Whatever works for their cause, when the burning of the churches, that was a good excuse. Mm-hmm. Attacking religion was a good excuse to burn the churches, to demonstrate how evil religion is. Mm-hmm. And that seems to me why the churches were burned there. Not our caucus, but this excuse. These, the bloods of the 2013, and ask graves as an excuse to burn the church was.
No, that's exactly right. It was an excuse to make war on the Catholic Church, and little ferrets like Justin Trudeau jumped on it, demanded that the Pope himself travel from the Vatican to Canadian soil to apologize for what we now know is fake news. So here's the question for us. I talked about the memory hole. Where's the Vatican apology for this? I mean, that's a pretty big deal, isn't it? To sully the memory? I mean, really, to wreck the memory and reputation of long since deceased Catholic priests and nuns like that? Is there an apology coming? No? Why not? And that's one thing to say, well, they're not going to apologize, which they won't, of course. But then the real crisis here is that because there is no apology forthcoming, the enemies of the church, the enemies of the cross, get to carry on with impunity. Just carry on with that narrative. And the narrative, of course, is that the Catholic Church, for 2,000 years, was a racist organization filled with hate and murderers. And it wasn't until Francis came along that we finally admitted how evil we are. This is the Church of Jesus Christ, friends. That's what the world now thinks about the missionary activity in Canada. Now, we've told stories down here before. St. Isaac Joe's getting his fingers eaten off by the Iroquois so that he couldn't say Mass. And yet he went and recuperated, comes back to them out of love, goes back to the Iroquois. They finally killed him. Are we apologizing for him too? For trying to give the light of Christ to the indigenous people? To love them enough to die for them? You see, this is why this is such a huge deal. Because now what are we hearing? Well, thank God for the Second Vatican Council, which finally put an end to the Catholic Church as pretty much the largest hate group in human history. And people are just dumbed down enough now to believe it. This is the church founded by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, a hate group. Even the Pope thinks so. And you know, I've done this before, and I want to do it again because it just, the fake news is everywhere. When it gets exposed, I think it's a good time for us to ask a few probing questions. So these critics of the Catholic Church, these critics of the Catholic missionaries for 1,000 years, you're so smart. Your little war against white Europeans. I get it. Your war against the church. But I would like to ask these critics of the church that built Western civilization, where exactly were you guys when the Catholic Church invented the hospital system a couple of thousand years ago at least? Where were you? Because the truth versus the narrative about something like a hospital system, which is what the Catholic Church built, public hospitals did not exist until the Christian period. Go ahead, look it up. We've talked about this before, but we need to talk about it again because the lies coming from the top, the propaganda all around the world, is really doing irreparable harm to the Catholic Church. So take, again, the hospital system. That's a pretty interesting outreach to the poor and to the underprivileged and to the ill and to the sick and to the elderly, right? Well, you have to go back to the 4th century, the end of the 4th century, for the second medical revolution that they call, which took place with the founding of the first Christian hospital by Basil of Caesarea.
The buildings and the complex that Basil constructed became known eventually as the Basiliad, and it was a massive undertaking. Basil channeled huge funds from the wealthiest people of his area to build this facility. The facilities included in the Basiliad kitchens that fed the homeless. There was a trade school that helped the poor learn skills for employment. There was a hospice for the dying, and importantly, a fully staffed and highly skilled center of healing for anyone, regardless of their status in society. Here, people of any social standing could come and receive highly skilled medical aid for absolutely no cost at all. All of this is happening in the 4th century. St. Gregory the Theologian, one of St. Basil's friends from his student days, visited the Basiliad and wrote about it saying that it was the 8th wonder of the world. And St. Gregory was absolutely right, because Basil had constructed history's first ever hospital.
4th century! Within a few decades of that, such hospitals had become ubiquitous. They were everywhere. European exploration, you know, that evil European exploration, actually brought the hospital system to North America, to Africa, to Asia. Go ahead, look it up. St. Bartholomew's Hospital in West Smithfield in London was founded in 1123. It is the oldest functioning hospital in the world today. It was a monastery run by monks and serving the local community. People say, well, yeah, that's in the West. But what about the East? I mean, the East, they were like, you know, they had the herbs and everything, so they didn't need... No, that's wrong. The first Western-style hospital in Japan was established in 1556 by Jesuit missionary Louis de Almeida. Early Chinese and Korean hospitals were founded by Western missionaries in the 1800s. I can go on and on, but the thing is, you trot this out and people are going to go, wow.
So how did this hateful Catholic Church that spent most of its time eating Jewish children for breakfast, well, how did they ever find time to invent the hospital system? And if you poke around a little bit, you find that the Catholic Church invented orphanages, invented schools, those indigenous schools, for example, helping people, helping families, helping children whose lifestyle up way the heck up in the bush, way north, was changing. You could no longer live on seal hunting. Somebody had to do something. So the government began a school system. The Catholic Church helped out, right? Well, that goes, that tradition of schools, of educating children, goes back 1,000 years or more. The entire university system, in fact, modern university system, was invented by the Catholic Church. And of course, the brilliant, enlightened ones, the critics of the Catholic Church, like to talk about how much they care about the poor people. Oh, they really care about the poor. The reality, again, the truth versus the narrative, is that no organization in the history of the world has done more for the poor than the Catholic Church. And it's also, by the way, the most colorblind organization in the world. Always has been. That's the truth, friends. That's the truth, verifiable, easily proven truth, the fact, the historical record. But what does the truth have to do with the hateful Christophobic narrative in the world today? Nothing. And the Christophobes now, they would have their benighted followers believe that the church before Vatican II for 1,965 was racist, anti-Semitic, filled with hate. When the truth is, in reality, that for 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has been at the service of millions of underprivileged, poor people, minorities, victims of poverty, ignorance, and want. The church that Jesus Christ founded is the only truly non-racist religion the world has ever known, with membership open to all peoples, all skin colors. Her canonized role models are black, they're brown, white, yellow, red, Jewish, Gentile, every stripe of the human family represented. Again, that's the truth. No matter which mob is screaming for the lions, screaming for the rack, screaming for the cross, whatever it takes to silence Christians. That's what the church, that's what the evil Christians have been doing for 2,000 years. And the only way for us to prove our innocence, to prove we're not racist and anti-Semites and haters, is to deny Jesus Christ. And that's exactly what they want. That's what this is all about, for us to get so embarrassed and so humiliated, so dumbed down, so stupid, that we will deny Jesus proudly. As we talked about Fulton Sheen making that point, deny Christ in order to have all these wonderful things in the world today, and then the Antichrist comes. And until that happens, until we all deny, until we all become apostates, every tyrant in history will live in fear of those of us who proclaim the Christian faith, those of us who say Christ is king. That's what the war on the kingship of Christ is all about. And it's been going on for a long time. This is what Chairman Mao was afraid of.
A single spark can set the prairie alight. He said this to explain how a revolution could just happen like that, which is why they're paranoid and why they must crush even the faintest attempt to have a voice, because there's always the fear that something that happens might trigger a counter-revolution.
And this fear that people are going to keep the faith and undo the revolution, this is why Francis, for example, would cancel the Latin Mass, for fear that out of there's going to be a spark that's going to burn the whole modernist revolution down. It's the only reason they're after the Latin Mass. And this, friends, is happening all over the world. There's a revival of Christianity. There's a revival of the Catholic Church. What did I just see the other day? The Catholic Church now, there are more Catholics, there are more practicing Catholics in England than there are Anglicans. Through it all, despite the war on the Catholic Church, the war on tradition, the numbers are turning around. People, it's beginning to grow largely because of the traditional Latin Mass movement, which has set up all over the world an example of what the church used to be, how the church used to worship God. And now that's a mighty bright spark.
There are millions of people, millions of families with large families, lots of kids, right, who are going back and seizing that spark. And from that, they're learning to keep the old faith, and that's a threat to the revolution. Christian men now are rising to their knees all over the world. Now that's a beautiful thing to see. I didn't see things like that when I was a kid, when the revolution was in full tilt. I've seen things like that many, many times since, and all over the world. Again, in a few months, we will see it in spades in France, when as many as 50,000 traditional Catholics will descend on Paris and Chartres for high-profile traditional Latin masses and the proclamation of the social kingdom of Jesus Christ, okay? From these heroes, like these men we just saw kneeling, these young kids in France, from there, the heroes, the saints that God is going to raise up from, that's where they're going to come from, friends. He will raise up the saint. It's going to happen. Just need to hang on. Don't be deceived. Don't fall for the false signs and wonders of the false prophets who are all around us now. God has always raised up the saints in times like these. He's going to do it again. And I want to close by recalling one of them. We try to do that in this show as often as we can. Look back and tell the stories. And I want to tell the story in closing tonight of a president, a Catholic statesman I hope you've heard of. His name was Garcia Moreno, president, great Catholic president of Ecuador, who in 1875 was assassinated by Freemasons. Now, why was he assassinated by Freemasons? He was assassinated because he was Catholic. He was a Catholic statesman. He believed in the social kingship of Jesus Christ with every fiber of his being, right? And they hated him for it. They hated him because he was Catholic first. They hated him because the people responded to him. They voted him in three times. He consecrated Ecuador to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, officially. And for this, the revolution condemned him as a tyrant, a religious fanatic, a fascist, of course, all the usuals. His ultimate crime, however, was his new constitution, which he promulgated, which declared Catholicism as the official state religion of Ecuador. In 1869, President Garcia Moreno wrote a letter to Pope Pius IX asking for the Pope's blessing, because he knew he didn't have long on this earth. He knew they would kill him. They would do whatever it took to stop him from what he was doing to proclaim the social kingship of Jesus Christ. Now, in that letter, President Moreno promises the Pope that he would live and die for our holy religion. What greater privilege still, if your blessing were to obtain for me the grace of shedding my blood for him, who, being God, desired to shed his blood on the cross for me. So on August 6th, at midday, just after he'd spent an hour in front of the Blessed Sacrament, an exposition of the Blessed Sacrament in the Cathedral of Quito, Ecuador, President Garcia Moreno was hacked to death with machetes by a band of Freemasons in the street, a band of assassins, one of whom shouted as Moreno fell to the ground, "Die, destroyer of liberty!" And Garcia Moreno, the quintessential Catholic statesman, replies, his last words on this earth were, "God never dies." And this is the example for us, friends. God never dies, then. These are the same last words that would later be quoted aloud by Anchieto Gonzalez Flores just before his execution at the hands of Freemasons during the Cristero War. He said, "I die, but God does not die. Viva Cristo Rey." And thus was born the great rallying cry for all the Cristeros and for all of us, echoing down through history to today. And no matter what happens, that is the truth. God does not die, and Christ is King.